their sadness and their difficulties and their terrible outcomes and their mistakes just hit me like a storm.
Well, we have to go now, but that must have been amazing, an experience. Samantha Waltz, Jessica Page Morrell, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about Blended Writers on the Stepfamily Experience. Thank you so much. And you can find out more about it at stageandstudio.org. I have a link at Samantha's site, pathsofthought.com. And thanks so much for joining me today. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can hear the show again at stageandstudio.org. And you can find me also on facebook.com/stage, the letter N Studio, or tweet me at Stage, the letter N Studio, and I'll have the podcast up on iTunes as well as stageandstudio.org later today. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going to go out with more music from Gillicuddy at the freemusicarchive.org.
Louis de Bruges died at age 17. He left behind a treasure trove of original music, lyrics, and poetry. Free as the Sun is a multimedia project to keep Lou's voice alive and to give voice to one brilliant young man's experience of traumatic childhood abuse and his sorrows as he struggled with addiction. Listen to an interview by Delphine Crescenzo of Rhonda Case, Louis' mother, about this project online at kboo.fm/freeasthesun. That's kboo.fm/freeasthesun.
A liver to none but my own selfish demands.
This week on Religion for Life, my guest is Mary Flum Peterson. She's the author of White Dresses, a memoir of love and secrets, mothers and daughters.
Where people, I think, feel safer because they've read my book. They feel like, okay, you know, I can talk about this. You know, this person's going to understand because she's laid bare her soul.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes.
The music playing is Interstellar Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds. I'm Andre Middleton, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Today on Art Focus, we'll be celebrating public art. In art news, the Northwest Film Center is thrilled to present the 2015 British Arrow Awards. This annual juried survey never fails to deliver an entertaining mix of commercial creativity from across the pond. From November 27th through November 29th, visit www.northwestfilm.org for more details. The Hillsborough Arts and Culture Council present as part of their professional development workshop series, Getting Media Attention, a Guide for the Arts Community. This free workshop will take place at the Walters Cultural Arts Center in Hillsborough from 4 to 6 p.m. today. Today, my guests are...
Eloise Damrosch.
Keith Lockowitz.
Peggy Kandelin.
Kristen Calhoun.
What is public art?
Public art is artwork that is usually financed by public, usually commissioned through public funds, paid for by public funds, and is accessible to the general public most times of day in all kinds of settings.
Public art can be permanent, can be temporary, can be experiential, can be 1 hour, can be 100 years or more. It's an experience, and it's an aesthetic experience for the general public.
What is the impact of public art on a city or region?
The impact is that citizens have access to artwork, hopefully of all kinds, permanent, temporary, different scales, different artistic styles.
I think it helps define place. It builds landmarks that, in some cases, a city can be built around, but certainly that citizens can rally around. enjoy, have access to.
Who were some of the folks that got this program off the ground here in the Portland metro region?
The public art program here started in 1980 with the passage of two 1% for art ordinances, one by the Multnomah County, one by the city of Portland. So it took the elected officials at that time, and I won't list all of them because I don't know them all, to make that commitment and put it on the books so that it has teeth. And I suspect that all of our predecessors at the Metropolitan Arts Commission had a lot to do with that, specifically Selena Autumn, who was the director before our time.
How does the percent for art program work, and how has it evolved and changed over the years?
Well, it started out as a 1% in 1980, and that was 1% of capital construction projects over a certain threshold. For the sake of discussion, let's say $50,000. Then in 1985, 0.33% was added to that to take care of maintenance, because we have to take care of the work that we put out in the collection or out in the public, and to cover administration. And then in 2008, we increased it to 2% with the city and county. So it's 2% of public construction costs.
Publicly funded construction projects.
Over 50,000, and then for the county, it's a million.
Well, there were some other percent for art programs around the country. The state of Oregon had one, although it's sort of it's frozen in time at 1%, even though it's been around longer than ours has. There's a very old program in Philadelphia, and there was a smattering of other ones. And I think there are many programs in Portland that have been leaders in a field, and I think there were people who just felt it was time we did this.
Well, and I would say, too, if you sort of look around the world, a lot of great cities, what people know about those cities is the art that's in those cities. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a desire to kind of have this creativity stamp on our city.
And a lot of collections start by citizens wanting to donate something to the city. So we have a core group of about 10 historical sculptures that have been donated to the city. And a lot of cities even now begin their collections in that way. And then they go, what are we going to do with this collection? We have to, like, take care of it. We have to keep records of it. So we need to have an established program to guide it.
And I think in Portland, there's been a sort of a follow-on development, which is that with the establishment of the city-county percent programs, other aspects of government and non-government or quasi-government organizations have followed suit. I'm thinking in 1987, Metro had just passed an ordinance of their own to make sure that the convention center that they were about to build would have a significant art program, and then that's continued on into the future. The Portland TriMet, certainly, Home Forward, some of the housing authorities, it's become not only an accepted phenomenon, but it's expected. And so now private developers are coming on board because it's expected. Mm-hmm. And they all recognize the value added of including art in a facility.
So what are some examples of public art that was funded by this program?
Well, I think of some of the high-profile examples, Portlandia, obviously being one of the first. The Pod across from Powell's, which is by Pete Beeman. If you think of that little triangle of concrete and what it would be like with nothing there, I think that's a great example of public art making a difference, being a landmark. We've also, one of our key donations that has a high profile is the elephant in the North Park blocks. But it really extends beyond the many pieces in the Transit Mall, the downtown core, to some really neat pieces on the outskirts of town. Thinking of Water Please out by the St. John's Bridge, the Donfell structure out there. So
libraries also. Yeah. There are a lot of artworks in libraries, especially the newer libraries that were built in the 90s. We focused some considerable energy on making sure that the new buildings had artwork and that there was a good geographic distribution in the artworks that we did.
We've done the same thing with police stations, fire stations.
We have two skate parks, one in North Portland at Pier Park, and one in East Portland at Benedict Skate Plaza.
Health centers as well. Mm-hmm. So just really trying to be in sort of every aspect of the community.
Great. So how are works selected, and how are their location, how are they paired up with locations?
So one of the ways that I think Portland's program is distinct is that our selection process always includes a range of artists and community members. So for every project that we do, we set up another selection panel. We have another group of people that are looking at it. So over time, one of the things that if people come to the exhibit at City Hall, they will see this huge banner that we have that has over 1,000 people that have been involved in the program over time. So so every group is picking for their particular location.
What is this anniversary and what's happening at City Hall? Can you give me some details about that?
Well, we're coming up on, or we are in the year that is the 35th anniversary of the Percent for Art program. Another couple of anniversaries that happen fall in the same sequence. The 30th anniversary for the Visual Chronicle of Portland. It's also Portlandia's 30th birthday. And we have the 20th birthday of RAC, which used to be the Metropolitan Arts Commission City Bureau, and we've transitioned into an independent nonprofit. So the celebration is kind of a way to show the public the variety, the diversity of all these different programs that we have at RAC, not just the permanently sited. We've also got a portable works program that puts smaller 2D works throughout city and county buildings. We've got the Visual Chronicle, which is sort of a subset of that, focuses really on artists' views of Portland. We've got intersections, residencies. We've got Art on the Street in situ program.
Temporary works. We have a murals program. Our murals program is 10 years old this year.
So the celebration at City Hall is celebrating all these different programs.
And it's a celebration of both the city and the county collections.
Now you mentioned murals. Was there recently something to do with murals I might have heard about? Some sort of conflagration or some sort of collection of murals that happened here over the summer? Does that ring a bell?
Forest for the Trees, you're talking about. This year was the third annual mini mural festival that was put on under the leadership of Gage Hamilton. And he's bringing artists from around the world to come to Portland for a week to paint murals on selected buildings. And RAC has been a partner with him for the last 2 years in helping him make that happen.
Now, are all these murals in the downtown core?
No. There's some that are, they're all over the city. And there's a real focus of them in Southeast because there's a lot of big walls and close in Southeast. And he's looking for big walls to paint. But there's one out on 79th and Stark.
Is there any way for our listeners to find like a listing or?
Of all the murals, and there's three sources really. One is Forest for the Trees website, ffttnw.org. The RAC website, rac.org, and you go to the public art search, you can see all the murals that we have funded, which have been 70 over the last 10 years. And then I keep a list of city murals, murals that have gone through the city's permit process.
Nice. One thing I wanted to talk about was in what ways can the public art program reflect the myriad different communities we have in Portland? I mean, is the murals part of that? But how do different communities, neighborhoods have an impact so that the public art that might be funded in their area reflects them?
Well, we've been making a real effort over the last couple of years to diversify the people who sit on selection panels and also how to reach a wide range of artists And our engagement staff has been fabulous in helping us connect to communities that either don't have much art or they want more. And we've been able to build some partnerships that aren't necessarily part of a very structured program of public art, but we're trying to work more on a grassroots way so that people find their way to some whatever kind of artistic expression they want. And it might be part of a festival. Sometimes some of our new grants that are reaching new audiences are asking for RAC funding not through the public art program, but through our grants program to actually engage neighbors in art making and art celebrating.
Cities across the country have wrestled with funding of public art that has been controversial to some due to content or its cost. I'd love to hear your thoughts on how one might advocate for the decisions of art councils and art commissions, how they must make those decisions on behalf of the public.
We have been fairly lucky, I think, over the years of the many years of our program, that we haven't had a lot of very controversial situations. But when we have, for whatever reason, our tactic is to not get defensive and say, you're wrong. I mean, you're entitled to, art's a subjective thing, and you're entitled to believe what you believe. But we stand by our process. And it's a citizen involvement process, as Kristen was saying. It's a process that represents best practices nationally in the field, where you have artists helping lay people to make good decisions. And these selection panels that are really responsible for whatever the final product is, I mean, our board has to vote on the contracts, but these are the people who really get in there and understand the neighborhood and the people and the situation and follow our process. And I don't mean to make it sound bureaucratic, because it's a fairly simple process. But if you can look back and say, well, we did all of the things that we believe are responsible in commissioning artwork, and we're really sorry that you're offended or you don't like it, but maybe with time you'll feel better about it. And usually it tends to die down when you give them that kind of information. And sometimes it doesn't. We've had to make some adjustments.
Well, and I would say also that over the broad spectrum of the public art collection, hopefully people have things in the collection that they really love, and maybe they have things that they really dislike, but maybe someone else really loves that piece. And yeah. So I think that balance is okay. And I also feel like when we do have controversy, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have controversy over artwork, because you talk about it. It means that you're discussing what the meaning of something is in your place, and the meaning of place, I think it gets at the heart of why people feel strongly about their neighborhoods.
And the citizen involvement, it's really that we allude to in the selection panels, they're the ambassadors for us for the artwork. They're connecting us to the communities, and these panels are a really good educational tool.
I also see, Peggy, the overlap of some of the residencies that we do. Some that have happened at the Juvenile Justice Center with artists going into communities with kids at risk or even adjudicated youth and providing a mentorship program, showing examples of artists of color who have succeeded in a kind of a tough career as role models for kids. So there is really a sort of an overlap with what the county justice program is trying to do and artists are doing and art making that can really help build sort of a teamwork approach into making your city a better place and being able to show examples of that, which we have several, many actually, is a great tool to convince city leaders that this is a program worth having.
Hollywood Theater applied for supported funding through our murals program for a graffiti mural by INSA, a noted artist from London. And he worked with students at Open Middle School for a month. And they created the design. First he introduced himself, who he was, what his background was, and then he worked with the school in creating a design for the mural, and the kids all helped paint it. And what's unique about this mural is if you download an iPhone app called Graffiti and you hold it up to the mural gets animated. He had to paint eight different layers on this mural. So there were 40 kids he worked with, 8 layers of paint that he had to paint in like 2 weeks. It's the most complicated mural he had ever undertaken. But it was a grand success.
Someone mentioned something about temporary art. Is there a space in Portland where people can see and interact with artwork that maybe isn't as permanent as a sculpture or a...
Well, the one that comes immediately to mind, because it's a project that I run, is the Portland Building Installation Space. We present 9 different projects over the course of the year. These are 4-week-long installations. It's a space that's devoted to installation space. It's an open call. Every fall we do it. People can apply with a proposal. Selection panel selects projects. It's actually what I call kind of a gateway project. The studio practice and, you know, taking on the red tape of public art commissions, large public art commissions, there's sort of a divide there, and this is a bridge. It helps people get a sense of what taking on a piece of public art is like. Got to put in the budget, got to do a proposal, you've got to be able to carry out what you've proposed. Some artists in studio practice like that, some don't. It's a great way to learn about that.
Awesome, great. One last question, and this one's going to be a little bit broader. What's the future of public art in our region? Obviously, Portland is changing by leaps and bounds. It's expanding, some areas are contracting. Rose-colored glasses, future think. Where will public art be 10 years from now? Is it just more sculptures? Is it more murals? How will the definition of public art possibly grow and change as our public changes?
So how would the definition of contemporary art change?
Yeah.
You know, as you sort of have to look at it within look at that as well, because we would like to grow our program by growing with contemporary art as well.
Yeah, I guess that's a lot of what I was going to say as well, is that I think one of the things that I feel proud about with our program is that we have been responsive to the artist community. Years ago, we were hearing from the artist community, we want the ability to do temporary works, so we create new programming to do temporary works. I think, one of the projects that I've been working on is a projection project on the side of RAC. Happens on the first Thursdays. And so media arts, I think, is something that we will see more of. But I think, to me, one of my biggest aspirations is that we are responding to what neighborhoods and community members are saying in terms of what some of their aspirations are, and also what the artist community is saying about how they want to interact with public art. So I don't say it's going to be this or it's going to be that, but I think hopefully it's responsive.
I also think that the lines are getting more blurred between different expressions of artwork, and we see this in our grants programs where it used to be that you could have a dance panel and you could have a visual arts panel and you could have a music panel, but now they're having to have all of these overlapping. All these disciplines are not in their proper boxes, and I think there's some pretty interesting results of that. And then I think you add the new populations that are moving here, the new cultures they bring with them to that mix, and it's starting to look pretty interesting.
That the idea of the social practice being interwoven into a lot of the existing projects, how do we need to respond to what artists are doing if there's a social justice element, a performance or an event that's associated maybe with an installation or a set of artifacts? How do we make that happen, and how do we serve the artists and the diversity of communities of artists that we are seeing expanding here in Portland?
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today at Art Focus. I want to thank our guests, Eloise, Keith, Peggy, and Kristen for joining us. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you.
It was fun.
As my guest mentioned, there will be a celebrating public art event hosted by the Regional Arts and Culture Council this Thursday, November 19th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Portland City Hall. There will be snacks, refreshment, live music, and more. As they celebrate the contributions that public art has made in our region. To learn more about public art and the public art program, visit www.racc.org/public art. In art news, the Northwest Film Center is thrilled to present the 2015 British Arrow Awards. This annual juried survey never fails to deliver an entertaining mix of commercial creativity from across the pond. From November 27th through November 29th, visit www.northwestfilm.org for more details. The Hillsboro Arts and Culture Council present as part of their Professional Development Workshop Series, Getting Media Attention, a Guide for the Arts Community. This free workshop will take place at the Walters Cultural Arts Center in Hillsboro from 4 to 6 p.m. today. Well, that's all for this week's Art Focus. Thanks to the engineer Janet Anderson and all the KBOO volunteers and staff that make this program possible. You can always find photos, links, as well as the guest info on our show page at http://kboofm/artfocus. Please also follow the link to like our Facebook page at KBOO Art Focus. If you missed today's show, there is always a podcast of the show online later in the day. It's my goal to meet and introduce the listeners of KBOO to a broad spectrum of regional artists. If you're a visual artist in any medium, I'd love to have you or your organization on the show. It's also my goal to share information relevant to artists as well. When I learn about residencies, grant deadlines, or call for artists, you'll hear about it on this show, as well as find it on our Facebook page, KBOO Art Focus. Thank you so much for joining me. Take care, and please go out and see some art. We're going out with the music from Danny Skrilla from Portland's own Zam Zam Sounds. Thanks again for joining us on Art Focus on KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Book of Mermen, a play running from Friday, November 27th through Saturday, December 19th, presented by Triangle Productions in Portland. The Book of Mermen is a new musical comedy where Mormon missionaries meet Ethel Merman. Again, that's The Book of Mermen, playing from December 19th at Triangle Productions, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Everything's coming up roses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Charles Adams Family and Friends, an art show of 52 original artworks by the creator of the Addams Family and beloved New Yorker cartoonist. The show is up through December 13th at the Saruman House, 5131 Northeast 23rd Avenue in Portland. Saruman House is open Thursday and Friday from 4 to 8 p.m. and Saturdays and Sunday from noon to 4 p.m. Again, that's Charles Addams Family and Friends, an art exhibit up through December 13th at the Saruman House in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Joe Hill Centennial Tribute Concert Thursday, November 19th, 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. Joe Hill was a member of the Industrial Workers of the World and wrote the classic labor songs There Is Power in a Union, The Rebel Girl, and many more. Joe Hill was executed by the state of Utah 100 years ago and will be remembered with a concert featuring Anne Finney, Citizen Band, and General Strike. Again, that's the Joe Hill Centennial Tribute Thursday, November 19th at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for two positions. We are hiring a membership director. This is a part-time position, 32 hours per week, $15.11 per hour. We're also hiring a PM News and Public Affairs director. This is a salary full-time position, paying $31,400 a year. The full job descriptions and instructions for applying can be found on our website on the homepage on the right-hand side under News from the BOO. That's at kboo.fm. On the homepage, right-hand side, under News from the BOO. Applications are due Friday, November 20th at 5 p.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. This month, the band will be El Cuadro Pepe y Rafael y Lily Last with cantores Elisa Rocha y Christy Jenny. Again, that's La Peña Flamenca de